Well, I am Kevin Hughes. I am actually Sam's cousin. Fortunately, it's kind of nice. My wife Susan. We've been married for 7 years. I have three kids. Brandon is 4. Addison is 2, and one is still in the womb. His name's Blake, and he will be joining us at the end of August. Sorry, at the end of August. So, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, Sam approached me and asked. He said he was going to be out of town and asked if I would want to talk. Well, I was crazy enough to say yes. And so then I started to think about it, and when it came a little closer to, I asked him, okay, you know, I thought the easiest thing for me to do was, you know, have some structure. So, yeah, we're going through Joshua, and I asked myself, okay, so where are you going to be at in Joshua? Because I'm just going to pick up where you left off. I've done commentaries in college, actually one, an exegesis. It's a commentary on some verses in Scripture. So I'd done it before, so I thought, okay, this will be a little bit easier. I have a little more experience under my belt, a little bit older. But then he explained that he was on a series of chapters that he was going to summarize multiple chapters. I think it was 5 or 6 chapters. And so I thought, okay, that's a little much. I'm not sure I want to do that. And fortunately, he followed it up with a second option, which was whatever God's working in on your life, go ahead and talk about that too. You know, if you want to talk about that. So since I wasn't going to be doing the multiple chapters, I decided, you know, I need to sit down and figure out what God is working on in my life. And it's something that God's been working on in my life, I mean, been on, you know, my mind ever since I can remember. I've grown up with it. Most of you, it's on your minds too. So I'm not alone here. And so I decided to talk about money. Money, right? The root of all evil. It's the thing that causes corruptions on all levels, right? It can cause you to do things that you never thought you'd do. It can infiltrate individuals, couples, families, churches, small business, big business, politics, government, and even nonprofits. And it's that thing that can cause sin into your life and cause you to do bad things. Now, I saw a lot of you squirm when I said what I did. And you should squirm. Because I forgot one very important word here. The word is love. The word is love. It takes it from a physical object of material things, money, wealth, and it turns it into a heart issue. The idea of love. It's what you do with it. The verse that I am kind of teaching from tonight, it's kind of the theme for tonight, is 1 Timothy. And now I have to look at my verse. I think it's 6:8. No, 6:10. 1 Timothy 6:10. And it reads, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil." Note, it does not say money is the root of all evil. Right? It says, "For the love of money is the root of all evil." That's a common misunderstanding, both in the church as well as in secular society, where, especially these days, where it's the view of anyone holding wealth tends to be evil. They got there because of things they shouldn't have been doing, or they're using it for the wrong purposes. But you got to be careful doing that, because this verse right here, often misquoted, is a heart issue. And it's hard to judge people with their heart unless you know them personally. And so I want to caution you when you're, you know, making judgments and looking at this idea of money and wealth. And it also causes us to have, you know, if we have that conviction, it causes us to have guilt. And I'm going to try to show you tonight that we should not be guilty, not feel guilt when you are obeying God's commands, working hard, and because of that, you're being rewarded for that. Now, when I read this, when I originally read this, and I started diving into this, I see that "for the love of money." And I think, okay, I'm in trouble, because I love money. I do. I love every aspect of it. I love the way that you can earn it. I love the way that in this culture, in this country we live in, you can come from nothing and, you know, get to the top. Just with an idea, a new way to serve others. I just find that fascinating. I love, you know, budgets and spreadsheets and, you know, all the analytical stuff behind money, how it's used, investing. So I had a real problem with this. And it's not just me. I know most of you, if you think about it, you love money too. And it might not be the aspects that I'm talking about. It might be You know, for one instance, I love the way people can use money to help others. You know, you love the way someone can donate money to build orphanages or hospitals or send, you know, support missionaries. And so there's, if you really look at it, you might have this idea that, you know, I don't love money. But if you really get down to it, you probably do in a way. So we're all fall into this. But I, being the analytical mind, I want to know how much love. I want to be able to measure that. I mean, I have love, so am I in that trap? I don't know if I am, because my love for it, most of the time, is because I desire to support my family. I desire to be financially secure. I even desire to build wealth for future, you know, Hughes generations. And so I needed to come, I decided to focus on that word love. So I looked it up. There's, I think it's known that in the Greek terms, there's four words for love. Right? In the English language, I can love pizza and I can love my wife. In you know, the other, in the Greek terms, there's four of them. You know, I can't name them off. I think there's agape and philos, and there's two others. No, I think there's four. So I decided, you know, I need to find out which one this is so that I can gauge where I'm at, so I know when I'm getting to that level where I'm inviting sin and the devil to get a foothold in on my life. And so I looked it up. I'm not very good at looking up that type of thing. I don't spend a lot of time in commentaries, and it took me a while. But I realized it wasn't the word love that was defined in the Greek language. It was the whole phrase, love of money. And this is actually, the commentary I was reading said that this was the only place that the love of money, that phrase, was used. And what it, and then the word translated, I'm going to try to do this. I have the pronunciation here, and I'm still going to butcher it. Philarguria. Something. But essentially what it means is the excessive or insatiable desire for wealth or gain. So it's not just love. It's this insatiable or excessive desire for it. And to kind of help us out with that, we're going to look at Matthew, let me see my notes here, 6:24. Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God, and my version says mammon, but it's the God of money, so money. You can't serve God and money. So essentially what this is saying, that verse, you invite evil into your life, once money, that desire for money, takes that number one spot. As soon as it starts moving up your priority list and you make it that number one spot, that's when you start inviting sin into your life. That's when you plant these roots for evil. And so that's an important thing to know, especially when, you know, evaluating yourself and keeping that perspective of, you know, when does it get to that point? So now we've figured out, you know, where's that measurement? You know, we know that we're trying to avoid this excessive desire for wealth or money. We need to look at, you know, how do you avoid that? How do you avoid getting yourself to that point? And so when I looked at it, I decided to look at it in a way to figure out, you know, where does my desire for money come from? You know, why do I desire these things that I do? So the first thing I thought of is from the very beginning, my parents, right? Everyone, when you're young, most people have chores. You do the chores, you get paid. You don't do the chores, you don't get paid. So from the very beginning, my parents taught me that if I want things, if I want money, I'm going to work for them. The other thing they taught me is that they gave me things I needed, like a bike, right? Every kid needs a bike. Parents don't want to drive their kids around everywhere, so you give them a bike they can take themselves. They bought me a bike. Well, after a while, you know, I noticed the bikes my friends had. Well, I thought I was entitled. I wanted a bike just like that, one of these nicer bikes. So I went to my parents, and I say, you know what? This bike, I want a nicer bike. I want this bike. Well, explain to me that, you know, no, we got you a bike. It's perfectly good. If you want above and beyond that, you're going to have to work, do extra chores, find another job. So I did. Things I did, you know, berry picking. Was able to earn enough money to buy that bike. So parents, you know, you just grow up. Parents instill this idea that money buys things. And when you're at a young age, you have a very selfish attitude. You're not forward thinking a lot. It's all about me. It's all about mine right here and right now. And some people never grow out of that. Another thing I looked at is society. right? You see commercials always promoting that next new thing, saying that you can be better if you have this. You will have this image if you have this car or house or anything. It's even in, you know, TV shows these days and all the reality TV shows that are going on, you know, all the wealthy reality TV shows. They show you that you can live this lifestyle if you keep striving for that. Well, guess what? It's always a moving target. You will never get to the level you want because it will always move up. There will always be something more that you want. And then kind of similar to that, my wife and I watch HGTV once in a while. And it's amazing how society has shaped the new generations. Back in the day, my parents started out with a starter home. I mean, it was ugly. It had good bones, but it was ugly. And they put sweat equity into it. They lived within their means, and they built it up. They got to a point where, okay, our family's getting larger. Time to step up to that new home, right? Now, on HGTV, every now and then we'll watch Property Virgins. I don't know if any of you have seen that, but tell you what, their perspective has changed. We see these newlyweds fresh out of college, ready to start a family. Their starter home is in the nicest neighborhood, on the nicest block, all the bells and whistles, brand new home. So you have this thing bombarding you, and it just causes you to take that mindset. You see it every day. It's something that we have to fight. Now, so I've explained that, you know, our problems, we get to blame on our parents and society, right? Kind of the theme. But that's not true. I don't believe that. I think we should take responsibility for our own things. We shouldn't be blaming others. But that's just kind of how it works. That's what shaped, you know, my thought, and I would assume yours as well. But it's not just that. There's another thing. God has called us to work. God called us to work from the very beginning. I'm not going to flip to it. But Genesis 2:15, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. This is before the fall. Granted, work probably got a lot harder after the fall. But originally, God didn't design this Garden of Eden, this utopia, for man to just sit around and enjoy. Just be lazy, right? He called us to work. He didn't say, Adam, go ahead. I created this. Enjoy. No, he told Adam, get in there and start working it. So he calls us to work. Well, he doesn't just call us to work. Later on in Scripture, he doesn't just say work. He says, you can interpret it as you need to work hard. You need to work hard. Scriptures that I researched and looked at were Ephesians 6:7. Well, I think I'm going to flip to this because mine doesn't have as much. It's going to test my knowledge of the New Testament. Okay. So it's Ephesians 6:7. Let's see if this is the one. Yeah, bondservants. Well, I'll go 6, 5 through, looks like 8. Bondservants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling in sincerity of heart as to Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With goodwill doing service, as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from God or from the Lord, whether he is a slave or free. So the part I want to pick up on is that we need to do good service as if we're serving the Lord. Right? And what does that mean? What if you went into work tomorrow and your boss was now God? Think of how you would change. You know, you'd show up on time. You'd work hard. You would work as a team. You wouldn't gossip. You would work with integrity and honesty, right? You would serve as if you were serving God himself, okay? And then the next verse I looked up. It's the same type of thing. And this is Paul in these instances, and he's writing to churches. In Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, see, that's on the crease. Work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Can you imagine that? Even if you own a business and you don't technically work for anyone, you actually do. You work for your customers. Think if your customer walked in and it was God. Think of how you would cater to that. Think of how you would serve this person that just walked in. Well, it also says in Proverbs 14:23, all hard work brings a profit. right? You take that type of work ethic into the marketplace, people are going to want to reward you. Do you take that kind of work ethic into a business, customers are going to want to reward you for that. And guess what? That is okay. That is okay. You're called to work hard. It's, you know, Solomon says in Proverbs right here, all hard work will bring profit. And that is okay. And why is that okay? Well, you know, God told us we have to work. If the result of that is profit, He gave us the ability to work. He gives us the money that comes from that. Right? And I'm okay with that. And one of the main reasons I was kind of flipping through this and it kind of struck me, I'm okay with that because I like to support, you know, my primary goal is to support my family, is to make sure they are taken care of. First the church and then my family. But ultimately, I'm called to provide for my family. In 1 Timothy 5:8, but if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Now, I've heard that before, but never quite hit home as it did when I was studying this stuff. It means that, you know, I'm providing for my house. So I'm obeying God's commands. He designed me to work. I'm working hard. I can feel good about accepting the results of my hard work, which in most cases is money or, you know, material things, especially when I'm using that to support my family and provide for my family. Okay, so we've kind of discovered where this idea and where our desire for money come from. Now, how do we keep it from rising to the level of that verse that we're talking about, where it's becomes excessive or insatiable? How do we keep it from taking that number one spot from God? God should be priority number one. We should have the excessive and insatiable desire for a relationship with God, for learning about God, for knowing Him more. That should be our focus. That should be primary goal number one. So how do we keep money from taking that top spot? Well, first thing I thought was, you know, keeping everything in eternal perspective. Knowing that everything we have is from God. Our abilities, our skills, our health, our talents, money, our wealth, it's all from God. He gives us everything. And what He does, He calls us to manage it. He calls us to manage it and be good stewards of what He has given us. Now, what that looks like, and we're talking about money, so we might as well stay on money terms. If you're doing any type of investing, you know, for retirement, you're going to give your money to a financial planner, financial advisor. If you feel comfortable investing, that money is going to be managed by a fund manager that you put that money into, right? You don't expect him. You hand him this. You don't want him to squander it. You don't expect him to go out in the backyard and, you know, bury it or burn it or waste it or go to Vegas and try to double your money on roulette. No, you expect him to invest it wisely, manage it wisely, so you can get a return on that investment, a return, right? Same concept with God. He provides us talents. He doesn't want us to sit on the sidelines and let it atrophy, right? He wants us to work that talent, perfect that talent, take it out to benefit Him. Granted, that benefit, it can be here on earth, but He wants a benefit. He wants a return on that investment eternally. Same thing with money. He calls us to manage it well and to not waste it. What does that look like? Well, and how it relates to the return on investment. Well, one of the things is being in a position to give, having a giving heart. Right? If you're giving back to the church, that's furthering God's kingdom. You're giving to missions. That's a return on His investment. He provides you this money. He expects you to use it wisely. Another thing that can come up, in society these days, the norm is to not manage your money wisely, it seems. It just recently, the housing crisis and, you know, the student loan crisis that we're going, that is projected here. People are not managing their money wisely. And so when someone sees someone managing it wisely, when crises come up, you have a reserve that it doesn't rattle you. You can just take it and fix whatever's there and build it back up. People see that. They see that, and it provides opportunity. At work, I work with a lot of folks that live paycheck to paycheck. And when the opportunity comes along where they're wondering, okay, why are you not, you know, rushing out the day your paycheck comes in to go buy things, right? Well, they ask that. Well, it provides an opportunity for me to hand them literature that is teaching biblical ways to handle your money, and in a way is planting that seed, provides an opportunity for them to come back and say, hey, what is this all about? I mean, I'm reading scripture here that deals with money. It opens that door, plants that seed, and provides me an opportunity to, you know, eventually, hopefully, you know, teach the gospel to them and bring someone else into the kingdom. Another thing, by keeping eternal perspective, you put your faith in God. You don't put your faith in money or your talents. You realize everything's from God. It's all coming from Him. You can lean on Him. It's this idea of kind of contentment, knowing that He's there. You lean your own money, money will leave. It can come. It can leave faster than it gets to you. And if you're leaning on that, you're going to fall on your face. But if you're leaning on God, and something comes along, takes things away from you, you're not going to fall on your face. You're going to be leaning on God. You'll be able to learn from that. You'll be able to grow from that. It gives you a completely different perspective, because you don't shape your self-image from money. You can shape your self-image from God. Kind of an example of this, I'll kind of give you a little bit of background into me. It doesn't have to do with money, but it has to do with the talent. I put a lot of pride in my ability to kick a football. In high school, I could kick a football really well. And one year, I had a really good year. Well, that whole off season, I kept, you know, bragging to my parents about how good I was. And I had dreams of going to, you know, college in the NFL. Well, my dad warned me. He said, you know what, Kevin, pride goes before a fall. You need to keep a humble spirit here. God gave you that talent. Okay? Give credit where credit is due. Well, what do parents know, right? So I ignored it, continued down my path, and my parents, unbeknownst to me, they were praying for me. They were praying that you know, God would humble me. Well, during 2 days that following year, I played defensive end too. Well, I had a cut block that I didn't see. Blew out my knee. Tore my ACL. Instantly, I'm laying there, and the only thing I can think about is, I'm done. I can't kick. I know what just happened. I'm not going to be able to kick again. And so it was. It was quite the shocker, because when you go to the doctor and you get that news that you might not kick again, and that was my life at that point. I put all my eggs in that basket, right? Well, I tell you what, I learned two things. One, if you're not leaning on God, you can fall hard. And if you don't listen to Him pulling you back, you know, in my case, God is very blunt with me. If I'm not listening, He'll slam a door in my face. He'll break my knee. He'll get my attention somehow. So, and then the other thing that I learned from this is that if your parents are going to be praying for you and they tell you to humble, do it. Do it. God answers prayer for your parents. Oh, another funny thing. My mom always prayed. I was a very hard kid. My mom always prayed that I would end up with one just like me. She didn't realize what that would do to my wife. Loves my wife. We ended up with probably not one, but two kids that are just like me. And my mom is now praying the exact opposite. So by having God as number one, you remain content, right? It's this idea that He can give, He can take away. You can be content with wherever you're at. But the thing you have to be cautioned about with contentment is it's not an excuse to be lazy or be stagnant. You know, even if you think you're working hard and you deserve more, you deserve a different job, you deserve a different title, well, there's a reason God has you there. Maybe your mission isn't complete. Maybe He has something there that you haven't learned yet. Maybe He has you there for a reason. And He still calls you to work hard, right? So He doesn't want you to throw up your hands and say, okay, God, you have me here, I'm content. Well, I'm just going to coast, right? That's not what He's saying here. Content, it still calls you to work hard, so don't use this as an excuse to be lazy. Now, I fall into this trap. I fall into this trap of contentment once a year. And my wife can attest to this, right around January, every year. Start going over taxes, right? You look back at the previous year, see what you made, you gave, you invested, you spent, right? And you also start setting goals for the next year. Well, the devil takes that opportunity, and he starts putting into my head that I deserve better. I deserve more. I'm entitled to more, right? I'm entitled to my dream job. I should be driving race cars on Sunday, right? So, but So this idea, and I'm an entrepreneur in my heart, and so I come up with all these ideas. I just throw them at my wife, and women are great for listening. And she just sits there and she takes it. And she'll interject, though. She'll interject things like, but Kevin, do you realize what job you have, what blessings you do have right now with what God's provided us, right? He's given me a job that has flexibility so that I can, you know, come home and cover for the kids when she's sick. It provides me enough money so that I can support my family. It has good benefits, right? So I have to, she all of a sudden puts this back, right back into perspective that, okay, you know what? This obviously isn't from God. How do I know that? Because she's not feeling the same thing. Also, it fades. After a month, it's gone. I'm right back to where I was. I'm in a content state, thankful for the job I have. And if God really wanted me to move on, well, there would be a lock on the door when I got there. You know, it would be on my mind all the time, or he would do that blunt, you know, kick in the head of the door lock. Kevin, it's time for a new job. So this idea, I wanted to say that in a way that I'm up here talking. It's because I struggle with this stuff. And I know that if I do, you know, others do as well. So I wanted to let you know that way. So some of the things that we do to combat that, right? Now we have this idea, and I know I've always, you know, struggled with my love for money. And it can get to that excessive level at some point. That it goes to priority number one, and you have to squash it back. Some of the things that we do. Every year I talked about setting goals. We call it a Hughes list. Every year we set goals for the year, goals for our family. Some of them are silly. Some of them are you know, money related, or I'm supposed to be reading 8 books or 7 books this year. I think I've gotten through one. I've got a lot of catching up to do this summer. But the two goals at the very top deal with devotions and prayer time. With couples and also individually. And that is really important. Think of how much time you spend on money. Thinking about it. Working for it. Spending it. Worrying about it. Compare that to how much time you spend in devotions, in the Word, praying, at church, worshiping. I bet if you stuck them on a scale, money would probably weigh out. So no wonder money is pushing itself up that priority list. And we need to put things in place to push it back. So that's why this thing is on there. We try to review our Hughes list every month, and every month it hits us right there that we need to be in devotions. We need to make God number one. We need to keep that eternal perspective that He has given us everything, and we are supposed to be good stewards with that. Another thing we do is a budget. My wife thinks that's a curse word because it, you know, every month, you know, I'll spend sometimes a couple hours going through it, figuring out how much money's coming in, where to put it, where we need to spend this month. Can we cut other places to make this happen? So I'm down in the weeds with this stuff. Susan, she wants to stay up 30,000 feet. She just wants to know that the weeds are there when she lands. Right? She wants to know that she's secure. There's money there. But we go over that. We go over that and discuss that. So we go over the budget. First thing I look at, and first thing, you know, I tell her is, you know, how much we made that previous month. And if you look at your monthly income, lots of times, I mean, it's kind of nice. You look at that, and your hourly income might not, you know, be that nice, but you've lumped that into a month's worth of work. It's kind of nice. Your mind instantly goes to, man, what can I buy with that? Holy cow, that was a lot. You know, and you start, your mind starts running on what you can do with that money, but it's not eternal. It's usually, what can I do for myself? All right, so the first thing we put on our budget, when I plug that dollar amount in, is tithe. 10% right off the top. Next is giving and offerings. Some missionaries, and we also support some, you know, little kids through Gospel for Asia. But that's the point is, that's at the top. So what that tells me is my mind goes from, okay, I made this much, that's awesome. Money's number one. Put it into this budget that I do every month, it instantly flips it. Money becomes number two, or further down the list. God jumps to number one, and it lets me realize that, okay, guess what, Kevin? You're excited about this, but all you did was obey God. Did what you were commanded. It's God's money. He tells you to manage it. He tells you to be a good steward of it, right? So it keeps that eternal perspective on your mind. You know, as you're going, as you're living, it just keeps putting these little reminders in place. Because I know that if I don't stay in devotions, if I don't, you know, keep reminding myself where this stuff is coming from, my mind starts going to that. I start focusing more of my time on the money side, how to get more of it, you know, how to keep more of it. I get this, you know, attitude of, you know, this is mine. But by putting these steps in place that I can have these little monthly reminders, it helps me, it helps my wife, it helps us to keep this eternal perspective on what God has given us. So, I kind of gave you a quick shotgun blast of, you know, money in the life of Kevin and how God's been working on my life for a while. So I kind of just want to circle back and summarize here. God designed us and called us to work. And not just work hard. You know, we're supposed to work as if we're serving the Lord. You know, what comes from that is typically money or material things. And we don't have to be ashamed of that. We don't have to be guilty of that. We can accept that. Money and material things, they're not evil in themselves. They can be used for evil, just like the internet, right? There's a lot of corrupt things on the internet. But there is a lot of good things that God is using the internet for. Some amazing things. And so it's a tool. It's a tool God has given us, a physical tool that we are called to manage and be good stewards of and use wisely. Now back to this verse. Now, 1 Timothy 6:10 talks about the love of money. I want to emphasize that. It's not money that's the root of all evil. It is the love of money. It is the excessive and insatiable desire for that money that causes that money to take priority number one, God to shift down, and it gives Satan that foot in the door to start having a sacrifice in areas of our lives, causes us to do things that we really shouldn't have, causes us to sin. It just invites sin into our life when we let that guard down. And I want to remind you, to combat that, you have to keep an eternal perspective. You have to put those reminders in place to let you know what all this stuff is that you have. Where does it come from? It comes from God. It keeps Him priority number one, and it keeps you on track to keep Him there and keep money on down the list. So that's all I had. Let's end in prayer. God, I want to thank you for tonight. I wish it would have been a little bit cooler up here. But I do thank you for the opportunity that Sam provided me to come up here and talk, and you placing this on my heart to talk about. And I just pray that it was a blessing to those that heard it. I pray that you bless us as we go throughout this week and bring us back this Sunday and next week ready to learn. Thank you. And I also want to just pray for Sam as he's traveling back from, I believe, California tonight, and keep him safe on his travels. Amen.